Om Ganatamirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam Vansa Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vaccha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo. The two classes that I will be giving on today and the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow is the Dawn to Dusk and Beyond Kirtan Day. The day after that, we'll have the second class, morning class. And the two topics are consciousness and attention, intention rather. Today we'll speak about consciousness. And it's not going to be a technical analysis of consciousness from the scientific point of view, but rather we're going to lead into this topic and what specifically I mean by consciousness in relationship to Krishna's holy names. We'll begin by speaking about a pastime from the Bhagavatam, right at the very beginning of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. And this pastime is about Ajamil and how Ajamil was delivered by the potency of the holy name. This is one of the main glorifications of Krishna's holy name in the Bhagavatam, so it's important that we understand it carefully. Now, Ajamil, as most of us are familiar with, he was born in a Brahminical family and was of perfect character when he was young. His training was perfect, his parents were pure, and he received the proper sanskars, the proper impressions in his consciousness, so that he would grow up to be pure of mind and pure of intelligence and pure in his activities. And he was trained in that way, but one day while he was a young man, and he was already married at this time, as he was walking, collecting flowers for his deity worship, he glanced at a low-class person embracing a prostitute. And they were, on their own material level, enjoying like anything. His body was covered with coloring and fragrances that would bring out his materialistic, lusty desires, and her clothing was loose, and they were laughing. And this sight entered his consciousness, and it awoke in him all the material desires that everyone possessed of false ego has. The material desires to enjoy on the material level, on the physical level, to enjoy sensuality. False ego convinces us that it is in our capacity to actually enjoy the material world. And false ego is the first product of Maya, because it is not actually possible for us to enjoy in the material world. Krishna is the enjoyer. Bhoktaram. He is the enjoyer. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, has said that if one actually becomes convinced in the depths of his heart that there is no situation that can bring him about enjoyment in the material world, there is no situation where it is possible for him to enjoy, if one actually comes to that point in his consciousness, in the depths of his consciousness, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, then one has taken the greatest step forward in spiritual life. Because our spiritual journey tends to be walking forward and then taking a glance backward. Only if I could have done that, and perhaps, and maybe, and if that situation, and if he was different or she was different, or if I had that, or if I had straight hair or curly hair or some hair, or if I was taller or shorter or was built like this and had bigger muscles and or whatever. The mind, being the prime receptor of Maya, gives us so many opportunities or thoughts that I can somehow or another, and Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagyavan Jeev, the Jiva just wanders from one situation in the material world, just looking for another opportunity. So that desire for sensuality awoke in that Brahmin boy's heart. And he tried to fight with it. He tried to repress it, suppress it, move it by the power of his intelligence and his training, but it proved to be insufficient. And that desire, jayato vishaya pungsan sangas tesho bhajaya, he meditated upon that woman. He meditated upon her. He couldn't get thoughts of her out of his mind. And then the mind took control, the senses, then the mind took control, what's next? The intelligence. And he began scheming. He began plotting and making plans through the polluted intelligence to bring that prostitute into his house. He eventually kicked out his young Brahmin wife and lived with her and had children, and his whole consciousness became degraded. She wanted money, and he became Bengali daku, Hindi dacoit or English or whatever, or he became mafioso. He became a gunda. He became a criminal to gain her, to give her, to make her smile so she would please his senses. So he stole. He became a thief. He became a gambler, a cheater. He became a kidnapper, a murderer, to feed his sense gratification, seeing her as the cause of his pleasure. He was in Maya, and he didn't notice that his body was aging and aging and aging. I once read, the question was asked, what was the most influential invention in the history of humanity in the past 2,000 years? And the answer given was not the internet, it wasn't the wheel, it was the mirror. Because people always look in the mirror now and think, wow, quite wonderful, or not quite wonderful enough. But when one gets older, when one looks in the mirror, one sees, thinks, who is that? Because my concept of me is 16 years old or so, and quite different than what looks back at me when I look in the mirror. Azumio didn't look in the mirror, and he couldn't tell that he was getting older and older and older. He had many children, and one youngest, when he was 88 years old, he had a young boy who was 5 or 4 or 6 or 3, very young, and he was 88. And he would get his pleasure. And I've seen this. I've seen this with myself. When one is aged, one looks at young children and thinks, oh, so nice, so nice. They're so innocent. They're so cute. Actually, they are, they are cute nonsense. Generally, that's what children are. When they're young, they're cute, but they're cute nonsense. Just run around pulling everything. And Ajamil's consciousness became fully absorbed in his young child. He would eat with the child. When he would eat, he couldn't enjoy unless the child was sitting next to him. When he was chewing or drinking or doing anything, he wanted that child next to him at all times, because the child, again, became the source of his pleasure. But as it will happen with each and every one of us, and if we consider the fact carefully, in 100 years from now, how many people who are alive in this world today will still be alive 100 short years from now? And in this room, how many of us will be alive in 70 years, 60 years? And in 200 years or 300 years, no one will even have remembered, no one who is alive will remember that we actually even existed in this form. And here I am thinking myself so important, so significant, an enjoyer. This is Maya. So Ajamil, trying to enjoy the product of his body, this boy forgot that his time was limited. We all try to push that thought from our mind. Theoretically, when one is young, one can't really conceive of it, that I'm not going to be here forever. When one's older, one can conceive of it, but tends to not want to think about it. But death struck Ajamil. Death struck Ajamil, and the Yamadutas, the messengers of death, attacked him, and they were ferocious, and they were horrible looking, and fear came to Ajamil's heart. And when one is fearful, one tends to hold on to something naturally. One has to do that. Something that will save me, give me some support. One holds on, looks for something to hold on to, because all the things that we usually hold on to in life when we're in difficulty, our credit cards, when we walk out the door, we check to make sure we have our mobile phones and our credit cards. And do we really check to see if we have Krishna with us? Oh, he's always with me. I don't have to think about him. That's his part, being always with us. But our part is keeping him close. So Ajamil wasn't in that consciousness. He had cultivated in his life a different consciousness. And that different consciousness was centered around, what's okay, Prabhu. At this point, his young son became the Pashanapina Pashiti. He became the fallible soldier that he tried to hold on, and that was very unfortunate. But fortunately, his young son had a name, and that name was Narayana. And he called out, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. As a person who is dying, and everything that he's always depended upon on his life is failing him, he called out with full sincerity, Narayana, Narayana. His son had no capacity to help him at all. Obviously, he's cute nonsense only. 4, 5, 6 years old. But Lord Narayan, Krishna, he is the one with capacity. Now, I would like to turn, I'll tell a little more and then we'll open up the Bhagavatam. So at that point, as the Yamadutas, who were fearsome, of appearance, horrible, terrifying, they were in his consciousness and he was calling out Narayan, and suddenly the Vishnudutas appeared. How did they appear? That answer will be given by Srila Prabhupada and our other acharyas. And they stopped the Yamadutas. Stop! You cannot take him! With authoritative voices, they stopped them. They had four arms. They were beautiful. As Krishna, Lord Narayan is beautiful. With a darkish complexion, with golden effulgent dhotis, powerful helmets, opulent bows, club, conch shell, lotus flower, and four hands each. Stop, you cannot take him. The Yamadutas were who caused terror to everyone else, and no one can stop death, as unstoppable as death, we say. They were stopped. Their power appeared minimum. And they said, who are you? How dare you stop us? This has never happened before. How dare you attempt to stop the servants of death himself? And they replied, who are you? We are servants of Yamaraj. If you are servants of Yamaraj, and you have judged this person irreligious and worthy of punishment, tell us how you have judged him. Tell us the difference between religiosity, dharma, and adharma. And they, being commanded by this higher authority that they could not stop, began to speak. Speaking about what dharma is, what religion is, what irreligion is, and why they had judged Ajamil so sinful that he had to be pulled from his body at this moment and judged. So they first said, look what this man has done. He has killed, he has stolen, he has eaten the food cooked by this prostitute. He had fathered children by her. He kicked out his wife, he neglected his parents. He gambled, drunkard, murderer, kidnapper. Everything abominable he has done. And religious principles he has violated. Religious principles. And they gave a whole logical explanation of the difference between dharma and adharma. Religious principles. Dharma comes from the Supreme Lord. We accept there must be a Supreme Lord. He is the Supreme Lord. And religious principles come from him. They are prescribed in the Vedas. And everyone is under the control of the three modes of nature. And according to the modes of material nature that control us, we have prescribed duties in the Vedas. And to follow these duties according to our modes, according to vana and ashrama, they are dharma. And to neglect our duties, this is adharma. And those who act against the principles of religion, they have to be punished. Otherwise, how will they learn? How will they become purified? Ajamil has acted in that way. Against religiosity, he must be brought before Yamaraj. He must be judged. He must be punished. He must be purified. Now, I would like to read one of the verses that they said. Describing the situation of every conditioned soul. This is text 52 in the first chapter. Please listen carefully. I'll read it slowly. The foolish embodied living entity who is unable to control his senses, who is unable to control his mind, due to the influence of the three modes of material nature, against his desires, he is acting always according to the modes to fulfill his desires, and he becomes like a silkworm that is trapped by his own creation, the cocoon. He traps himself by his own activities, by his own modes, by his own desires and actions to fulfill those desires. And there is no possibility for him to get out. These are the words of the Yamadutas. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own activities. And then he can find no way to release himself. We're all looking for freedom. We're all looking for the source of happiness. We're all looking for the natural me to manifest itself, who I really am, because we all feel so confined, constricted, forced to do so many things against our will continuously. Despite our continuous endeavors for happiness, we are trapped. And thus, they say, he is always bewildered and repeatedly he dies with a consciousness filled with more desires. If only I had this, and only I did that, and only if I did that. So he must be purified. So upon hearing this explanation by the Yamadutas, the Vishnudutas said, how unfortunate it is that those who are to be the judges of religion and irreligion do not understand religion and irreligion. They spoke very strongly. And then they explained the bad results that occur when the leaders, the topmost people, don't understand the difference between what is to be done and what is not to be done, and are not accurate judges. And then they explain that you have judged him sinful, and you say that he hasn't atoned.
That was one point I neglected to say what the Yamadutas had said. He performed the sinful activities, but he has not atoned. Prayaschitta. He has not repented for the bad things he has done, and therefore he has to be punished. And the Yamadutas, the Vishnudutas, then said, "You do not understand this man, Ajamil's position. He is sinless. He is sinless. There are no sins that he has to atone for. He is free." He had lied, he had cheated, he had done unlimited terrible things, but he was free because he continuously was calling out his beloved son's name, Narayan. "Narayan, come here. It's time to eat, Narayan. Come now. You should play. It's time to bathe, Narayan. Come and eat. Come and sit next to me, Narayana. Narayana, 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 Narayana." Now, then, he says, although calling the name of his son, he nevertheless, this is the Vishnudutas, said the four syllables, Narayana, simply by chanting Narayana in this way, he sufficiently atoned for the sinful reactions of millions of lives. Now the question can be asked, well, he chanted the name of Narayana, and okay, that purified him, and then he sinned. Again, he was eating everything, killing everything, doing terrible things, and he sinned. So therefore, he called his son again, Narayana, and that removed that sin. And then he sinned more, and he was calling the name of Narayana again, and those sins were removed. And finally, when he was dying, all the sins that he had committed up to that point, he removed by chanting Narayana. But that isn't what the potency of Krishna's names is. Krishna's names are even more potent than that. Could you please turn the page? Now, here's the verse that I wanted to speak about. And then we will get to the point that I really want to speak about consciousness. No.
It's the sheep with a one on the bottom. The yellow pen one.
Yes. A little hard to read. Could be maybe. Can you read it? No. Where is one? Himanacharya Prabhu? Okay, in any case, by the grace of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have it right in front of us. Now, what he does, yes. The Vishnudutas then explain many, many, many sins. They list terrible things that one can do. I won't read the list right now, but they're everything from turning against a friend, killing a brahmana, acting inappropriately with the guru's wife, mistreating women. There's a long list he gives. And then, Yamunacharya Prabhu. Yamunacharya Prabhu. That's the right verse. Okay. Thank you. And then he said, this is what the Vishnudutas say here. Sarvesham api agatvam. Please repeat. Can you read it? If you can. Sarvesham agavatam. That means, of all sarvesham, of all api agavatam, that of all
committing all kinds of aga, or sinful activities. Idam eva sanuskritam. Please repeat. Idam eva sanuskritam. Savesham api agavatam. Idam eva sanuskritam. This idam eva is certainly sanuskritam. This is the best method of atonement, the chanting of the names of Krishna. Why is it the best method of atonement? Nama vyaharanam Vishnu. Everyone, nama vyaharanam Vishnu. Nama vyaharanam Vishnu. Chanting, this is the best method of atonement. Nama vyaharanam Vishnu, chanting the names of Vishnu. Yatastad, and here's where it becomes even more interesting. Yatastad visayamati. Everyone. Yatastad visayamati. That mati means one's attention or consciousness or intelligence, but here Srila Prabhupada has translated it as attention. Tadvishaya. That when one chants the name of Vishnu, the attention, the mati of Krishna becomes focused on that person. Sunuskritam. Does anyone remember what sunuskritam means? Or maybe I didn't. Excuse me? The best method of atonement. The best method of removing the results of sinful activities is chanting the names of Krishna, so much so that Ajamil was judged as sinless after chanting the names of Krishna. Sunuskritam means the best way. And why is it the best way? Because other methods of atonement remove the results only. But when the attention of Krishna focuses upon us, sunuskritam, everything inappropriate in our heart will be removed. Reactions are removed, but everything inappropriate in our heart, including the false ego, is going to be removed. Because Krishna has focused his attention on the chanter, and he thinks this person has chanted my names. He is mine. And it is my duty to protect him. Therefore, because it places one under Krishna's care and protection, therefore, sunuskritam, and it will remove the sinfulest desire in the heart, from the heart. It will uproot it. And what is the ultimate sinful desire in the heart? The inappropriate desire that causes all the other desires, that causes us to be entangled forever in the cocoon of the material world, controlled by the modes of material nature. That desire is turning our back on Krishna. There is enmity with Krishna in our heart. There is an insane pride in our heart. Why should he be the enjoyer? Give me a chance. Why we can't, with that mood, we cannot be with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. We cannot be in Barsana. We cannot be at Govardhan. We cannot be in Ramanreti with Krishna, Balaram, and Radha Samasunda, until that
core problem is removed. Because as long as, because everyone in Golok Vrindavan has agreed on one thing, everyone is agreed on. There's so much going on there, and there's this gana and that gana, this group, and some are favorable and some are unfavorable. But everyone in Vrindavan is in love with Krishna, and they're only thinking of him as the center. And everyone's consciousness is simply focused on this most beautiful and attractive and charming of all persons. And unless, in false ego, it's just putting all that energy, the soul's energy, on me. Individually, each of us, I'm the center. Everyone should, as everyone in Goloka Vrindavan is looking at Krishna, I want everyone in existence to look at me in that way. Now, if we say it so directly as that, it's absurd. It's ridiculous. It's insane. It's insane. It's crazy. And yet, that is what false ego does. It makes us crazy. And in that consciousness, and the cure for that is chanting Krishna's names, because Krishna decides that he is going to place us in his care. Now, notice that we went over the words by words a little bit here, not again and again and again, but notice what the literal translation is. Nama Vyaharanam Vishnu. By chanting the holy name of Vishnu or the Lord or Krishna, Yatastad Vishyamati, the attention, the mati, the attention of the Lord comes on us. That's what it says on the chanter. But now listen to Prabhupada's translation. And is it on the next sheet, Yamunacharya, or not? No, okay. But listen to Prabhupada's translation. Simply by chanting the holy name of Vishnu, please repeat it so it sinks in a little more. Simply by chanting the holy name of Vishnu, such sinful persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord. Now that's what the verse literally says, but Prabhupada continues in his purport. Who therefore considers. Now Prabhupada is going to reveal to us here in his translation the way that the Supreme Lord thinks, the way he actually thinks, what goes on in his mind. It's so difficult to understand the mind of another, anyone else. What to speak of the Supreme Lord? If you know someone really, really well, after many, many years, you can tell how they think and how they react to everything. So Prabhupada here in his verse, he's going to tell us how Krishna is thinking. Who therefore, the Lord, therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name. Because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. He has called out my name. It is my duty to give him protection. And Ajami was only calling his son. He wasn't even calling, oh, Krishna, Krishna, I have no one but you. Who but you can protect me?
He was calling his son. This is extreme. It's extreme mercy. And it reveals the heart of Krishna. It is very soft. And different from the hearts of conditioned souls, Krishna takes the best out of Ajamil's sinful life. He took the one thing, practically speaking, that he did, and that was also covered, really, because he was calling his son, and he saw he is calling me. And it is my duty to give him protection. This verse, our acharyas explain, is Kamutyanaya, which means, Kamutyanaya means, if what to speak of, if this is how our Lord Krishna acts when someone is calling Narayan, who happens to have the same name as him, what to speak of how he will deal with devotees who are calling out to him with full dependence, Gotabdev Varanam Datta, and calling out to him with surrender, I have no one else but you. What to speak of how he will reciprocate with those who call out to him with love. You can treat me any way you want, but let me serve you, my Lord. I only want to serve you. How will he reciprocate with them? His Holiness Satchinandana Maharaj read one verse from the Rasa Dance section of where the gopis, while they were singing the Rasa Dance, the songs of the, or even before that, when the gopis stopped looking for Krishna, again, the mind of Krishna is revealed, and the mind of Krishna's devotee is revealed. That the gopis stopped looking for Krishna in the forest. They couldn't find him, and they were walking further and further into the dark forest. And they weren't thinking, after all we've done for him, he won't even show himself to us. He called us out in the middle of the night, and then he hides from us. They weren't thinking like that. They were thinking of his soft, tender feet touching the Sudachintamani dust of Vrindavan, that some ankur, some sprout or a rock may touch his feet and give him the slightest inconvenience. And Mother Yashoda, in a different mood and a different rasa, is thinking, I would die 1,000,000 times. 10,000,000 times, unlimited times I would suffer to save my son from one drop of inconvenience of perspiration. And the gopis therefore went to the soft sand of the Yamuna. And what did they do there? They began Nam Sankirtan. They began chanting Krishna's names. They chanted Krishna's names with all that love for Krishna, that focus on Krishna, just simply, it was all compressed into their calling out to Krishna, because without Krishna's presence, would they be able to live anymore? Because their lives were so connected to him and devoted to him, and all they could do was call out to him. So how can he reciprocate with them? Anyway, that's a whole, so much can be said about that he can't. He feels himself indebted. Na parye hum, because they are ekanishta, he is bahunishta. He has many devotees and they are only focused on him. So this verse, in a little bit of a covered way, covered means the kamutya nyaya, that what to speak of, that we have to do our little bit of work and not just take it. Oh, how nice. Krishna's chanting his names removes all reactions to sins, and therefore I don't have to, and therefore I'm not going to suffer for all the things that I do, what to speak of all the things I think. And no, we are supposed to get an illumination that only if I could develop my relationship with Krishna and give up this completely selfish, self-centered view of existence, which is simply illusion. It is Maya. It is born of false ego. But this wasn't the point I wanted to make. Krishna's attention is on me when I chant. And his heart is committing himself to me. His attention is on me. He's looking at me. But what does he see? And therefore, the point of this class was consciousness. And in the words that we have learned from the wonderful book about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur by His Holiness Bhaktivikas Maharaj, Drig Drishya Vichar, that the discrimination or the change of consciousness to thinking of ourself as the seer, and what's important is what I see. Change of consciousness from that to the consciousness of one who is being seen, to the consciousness of one who is being seen. Or in the words of Srila Prabhupada, don't try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will see you. So when I'm sitting down and chanting, what does Krishna see? I almost don't want to imitate all the things that Krishna sees when he sees me chanting. You know, but I'll do it just to make the point, you know. How much longer? How many rounds do I have left? Oh, Krishna's there. His mood is, I want to give myself to the devotee, and what is my mood? So during our time here at Varshana, keep this in your mind. What is Krishna seeing when I'm sitting down and chanting? Is he seeing someone who may not be pure, but is sincerely trying to take shelter of his holy names, sincerely trying to attentively at least hear one name? We may not be successful because we have different conditionings, with different modes of material nature attack us and control us continuously. But will he see someone who's sincerely trying? Sincerely trying to take advantage of the time that he has been allowed in contact with the holy dust of Varshana, to take advantage of that time to get closer to him, to be with him. To be with him in the form of his holy names, making the attempt to be with him instead of the usual. Just being with my mind. Forever and ever being with my mind. 1 second it's criticizing me, The next second, it's criticizing everyone else. The next second, it's telling me I'm the most wonderful, and everyone else is, this person did this to me, and this person did that, and they're so foolish. And then the next moment, oh, I'm such a, in New York language, a jerk. Such a fool, just and on and on, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and yesterday I did this, and it should have been like that, and on and on and on and on, just the mind traveling all over, all the soul's eternal, practically anadir bahimuk experiences in the material world, making its plans how to enjoy. And it's so unsatisfying. And the sweet fragrance of Krishna's association is just so far from that. And we all know this, but we have a terrible, terrible, long-standing habit. So what will Krishna see, especially during this time? Be conscious of that and ask yourself that question. What will Krishna see when he sees me chanting his holy name? Now, that is the core point that I would like you to take with you. Do you have it? Just try to stop during your time here. Just make an effort, part of your sankalpa, to support the rest of your sankalpa. Make the effort to be conscious of what you are doing and what Krishna is perceiving while you are doing it, while you're chanting. And then there's obviously a progression of higher and higher and higher states of consciousness that we can be in. But don't worry about the topmost, but just try to do the best you can, we'll say. So, if you understand my point here, I would like you to, what I'm going to say, Jai Jai Si Radhe Sham. Okay. Now, if you've understood what I would like you to do, is I would like you to loudly, not loudly put your hands in the air, but gently put your hands here and loudly chant along with me. Jai Jai Si Radhe, Jai Jai Si Radhe, Jai Jai, loudly anymore, Radhe. Now, there's one little addition to that, which really comes up in the chanting. As soon as you try to notice what Krishna is seeing, and it's not very pleasing when you notice that. And you're trying, and still your mind wanders so much. There's one more element in that you can add to your sincere attempt. And that one more element is begging. Guru Maharaj, begging Srila Prabhupada, begging C.C. Gornatai, begging C.C. Radha Govinda, begging the holy names to, even though we are undeserving, to give us a little mercy, a little undeserved help, and allow us to take shelter of him. So right now, we're going to perform that same exercise again. And we're going to chant Jai Jai Si Radhe Sham with our hands in the air. But this time, I would like you, since we are in the home of Srimati Radharani, if we could just put a little bit of request for mercy into our chanting, a calling out with the heart. And before
Before we do that, you can prepare by, I don't want to make everyone depressed, you can think about what a terrible person you are, and you can think about all the... No, don't think about it too much. Oops. But just consider whether or not you think you need some mercy. Just take a few seconds to just consider that. And see if you can go, just close your eyes for a few moments, and go to a very deep place within you, and just think whether you actually need some mercy. Just a few seconds. Personally, I think that who has been given more and has done less with it, very embarrassing. Okay. Now just take that mood and coat when I ask you to join me in chanting with the hands in the air. Just coat your chanting with some genuine feeling of I need help. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Jai Jai Shri Radhe. Thank you. But I wanted to say something else too. Because Krishna takes care of his devotees. We hear that. We hear this quality of Krishna, that he takes care of his devotees. And that makes us, even though I don't feel like much of a devotee, but inclined, somewhat inclined to trust him. Because it's a matter of trust and faith. Because how can you take shelter of someone who you don't trust, don't have faith in? By hearing about Krishna's activities, our faith increases. Krishna willing. Now, I would like to tell you one pastime. But before I would do that, I would like to solve two mysteries that you might not think are very mysterious, but they're there. One mystery is why did Prabhupada add this extra part that he thinks my devotee has called to me. He reveals the mind of Krishna. So one answer could be that Prabhupada is telling his own realizations and adding something from his own storehouse of relationship with Krishna. But Prabhupada was an acharya, and acharyas don't express their own realizations without referring to the previous acharyas. So here I would like to read some of the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, and that will solve the second mystery: is how did the Vishnudutas get there? So, the name of the Lord, this is from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. The name of the Lord may destroy sins, but how can Namabhasa be the atonement of thousands of grave, deep sins which cannot be destroyed by thousands of 12-year vows? He's expressing a doubt. How could one chanting of the holy name destroy every sin that one has committed forever? And then he says, chanting is the best atonement. What is the Sanskrit word for the best atonement? Sunishnita, thank you. Since it destroys the root of sin. And how does it destroy the root of sin? Is because Krishna puts his attention and he claims that person as his own. And he's going to make everyone who chants offenselessly, even once, into his servant. It will take longer or shorter, but everyone, he's written the name down in the book. So it is the best atonement. It is the ultimate atonement. And it is the only atonement, really, that will stop this continuous habit born of false ego. Because other atonements don't address the root of sin. But it is not only sunisnitam, but that is not the only result. Because from chanting the holy name of the Lord, please listen, the Lord's mind dwells, it rests, it comes to the person who chants. Tad visya mati, his mati goes to that person. And he thinks, that person belongs to me. That person belongs to me. I will always protect him. I will always protect him. Now, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about that? Think, how do you feel about that? That the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is his heart. How do you feel about that? You like that? Does a lot of your anxiety go away if you just trust that? I will always, notice the word always. So is this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's opinion? No. This is Sridhar Swami's meaning of the phrase. In this way, the Guru Parampara works. Hearing his name being chanted and remembering Ajamil, the Lord ordered us to bring Ajamil, who is chanting his name. So the Lord ordered the Vishnu Dutas to come, take him, protect him. That's how they were there. And then he explains the point about Kamutya Nyaya. Kamutyanaya means what to speak of. If this is the result of chanting Krishna's name offenselessly, he wasn't sinning and thinking, now I'm going to chant and remove the effect and then I'll sin again. And it wasn't like that. He was an innocent sinner in a sense. So he chanted one time. So what to speak of? Vishwanath says, how much more the Lord will remember a person who chants the Lord's name with a service attitude. This is the implication, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. So what does it mean to chant with a mood of service? It means to engage the senses, the body, and especially the mind as much as we practically can. But at least the tongue and the ear, and that will engage the mind. That is chanting with a service attitude, the basis of that. Or as Prabhupada translated, his first translation that he gave in the West to the devotees of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service with an attitude of wanting to serve him. Here I am serving so many masters who don't appreciate my service. Now let me serve you. Or another way Prabhupada translated it. O Lord, O Srimati Radharani, the energy of the Lord, Ladini Shakti, please accept me. Please accept me. When what is driving our engine, so to speak, of our existence is false ego, we are saying to Krishna, please accept me as your competitor. So that has to change, obviously. To please accept me as your servant. Now, that's what, concluding this part. Now I would like to speak about one pastime of Krishna's that I've just found one little part of it. Because, see, because, like if you read, if you watch the Krishna cartoons, and if you and if you used to be Amrita Chitra Katha comic books, and you read this, or you get the little sense of the pastime, but you don't get the subtleties of what happens, the details of what's actually going on. Because what's happening is Krishna's exchanging with his devotees, and the devotees are exchanging with him. Watch their moods. Watch the mood of the exchange between Krishna and his devotees. And the devotees and Krishna, how are they thinking? What are they doing? Go into the details. Don't read faster. Read slower. Meditate on the Bhagavatam, on the words, on the slokas. Go into it deeply. Otherwise, you'll start thinking, oh, I read this so many times. I already know this. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would hear from Sri Gadadhar Pandit, pastimes such as Dhruva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj. We all know those pastimes. He'd hear them hundreds of times, hundreds of times, hundreds of times, and he would cry hundreds of times because he was entering into the essence of the pastime, the exchanges between Krishna and his devotees. So I picked up on one little small thing, one little small aspect, two actually, in two verses of the pastime, not a Vrindavan pastime from the Bhagavatam, but a Dwarka pastime. Has anyone ever been to Porbanda? Porbanda. You from that place, Mataji? No. That is the place of Sudama Brahman. Have you been?
No.
So Sudama, as we know, and I'll tell the parts that we all know a little bit briefly. He was so poor. He was so poor, a Brahmana. And he was living on a different level where his life wasn't focused on the attempt to bring external things in to bring him happiness, like today's materialistic civilization is focused. Consume, consume, buy, 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 go into debt, fill your house with so many things you don't need, fill your heart with so many things, advertise it, buy it. He wasn't like that. He was internally based. But he was very poor, so poor that his veins were showing through his skin. And his wife said to him, you grew up with Krishna. They went to Gurukul together. They were school friends. You are close to him. You are friends. Just ask him for something. Something so we can live. They didn't have anything in the house. They didn't have clothing. He couldn't even wash his clothing because he had to be wearing something else as he washed that, and he didn't have a second piece of clothing. So he thought, all right, I'll go and see my friend Krishna. He didn't really want to ask anything. but I'll go and see Krishna. So he didn't want to go without a gift. But what do you give Krishna, who has everything, and you have not one thing in your house to give him? So he went to one of his neighbors and he borrowed some chipped rice. Just one handful of chipped rice, tied it in his cloth, and went off to see Krishna, walking to Dwarka. He walked and walked and walked and walked, and he arrived at the palace gate. One poorly dressed brahmana, he was allowed in. No one looked at him through the little slit in the door, the little mirror, the little piece of glass in the door. Who is it? Are you here to kill us, to steal? What do you want? We don't want to buy anything. Who is it? No, for pure persons, the Brahmins, the doors were open. No appointment required. He walked in, right into where Krishna was with Rukmini Devi, who was fanning him. And he was in the presence of all the opulence of Dwarka. Jewel, columns, marble, perfect cloth everywhere, perfectly white, everything fragrant, servants everywhere. And this poor Brahmin walked in, and Krishna immediately, maybe he was thinking, we were boys together, and now I'm an elderly person and the veins are showing through my clear skin and so skinny. Maybe he won't even recognize me. But soon as Krishna saw Sudama, he embraced him. Sudama, Sudama, Sudama. And they began speaking about the old days in Gurukula. And they remembered a very touching incident that they shared together. I'll mention it in brief, but just keep in mind that Sudama was there in the Gurukul with the most beautiful boy, his friend, whose eyes are like lotus flowers, petals that go to his ears, who is effulgently dark, but effulgent, and who has the most charming way of dealings. And his hair, at that time he was shaved in the Gurukula. And his smile, Madhuganda Mridu Smriti. Krishna's smile is so sweet, it is the sweetest part of his body. Vadanam Madhuram. The sweetest part of his face is his smile, which is compared to the fragrance of honey. Sweeter still than his face is his smile that is like the fragrance of honey. It is soft, mridu smriti, madhuganda. His smile is like the fragrance of honey, very subtle, not very subtle and captivating, who looks sometimes out of his friends, out of the corner of his eye. Oh, you see I'm looking at you? Just you, very intimate. And so expert and brave and effulgent in charisma. Charisma means power. So much unlimited, attractive shakti. Unlimited, ever-increasing attract. And he's Sudama's friend. And one day, as we know, but keep in mind, this is who's with Sudama is with. They go to the forest and get lost. They're gathering samitpani, firewood for their teacher, Sandipani Muni. And they get lost. And it begins to rain. And they are cold. And the rain is falling. And they're frightened. And he's with Krishna. And they're holding on to each other to keep warm in the night. And they have each other's company all night long. How intimate. Sharing that experience. Do you remember the time when you meet your old friends? Do you remember the time we did this together? Our hearts are bound. Do you remember all the people you shared? You lived in a Sankirtan van for months. Distributing Prabhupada's books. There's something in those relationships. Yes, Maharaj. So he had that with Krishna and they were talking about it. And what it does is the spark of that relation, the spark of the incident comes to one's consciousness and one's living it again. So sitting in Dwarka, he's living with Krishna in the forest while it's raining and experiencing the ecstasy of being with his dearmost friend. He had decided that he would not give Krishna the chipped rice. He was embarrassed. He didn't want Krishna, whose stomach, his digestive power, might be a little bit weak, to feel any upsetness in the stomach from eating this coarse food. So he decided, I'm not going to give it to him. But Krishna said, because after all, he knows everything, and his desire is to increase the rasa, to increase the ecstasy of the interaction between him and his devotee. He went to grab that chipped rice that was tied up in the cloth. Sudama tried to stop him. He grabbed it, opened it up, and ate some greedily. Why are you keeping this from me? And he began to eat more. Because asnami paratapmanaha, Sudama had full love, and Krishna couldn't keep away from any offering made with full love. He is hungry for the offerings of his devotee, whatever it is. Until Goddess Lakshmi Devi, Rukmini Devi, stopped him. That's enough. Sudama spent the night there. He left the next morning. Krishna walked with him some of the way. Oh, what a walk that must have been. With Krishna some of the way. How far will he walk with me? How far will you? And then it's just being with Krishna and just talking and this one's heart overflowing and over by a tsunami of Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti rasita bhavatomati. Of just the exchange and Krishna's with him. And then Krishna says, I have to go back. And maybe they embraced again. He doesn't describe it in the Bhagavatam. But how what a parting that must have been. Krishna, they had not seen each other for many, many years. What a parting that must have been. What was Sudama thinking when they left? And he walked. Why didn't Krishna send him on a chariot? This poor skinny brahmana, why did he make him walk? This is actually, I had heard one comment by one devotees. And then I read it in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, how Krishna wants to purify the world with the footsteps of his devotee. He wanted to purify his kingdom by the stepping of Sudama through his kingdom. Then Sudama got near his house, and he saw, as we know, palaces, opulences. He didn't ask Krishna for anything. Krishna had actually bestowed the opulences of Indra or the opulences of Dwarka upon him. But he didn't say anything. Our Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains why he didn't say anything. Because Krishna was embarrassed. Now, we're trying to develop our relationship with Krishna so that we can surrender to him, give our hearts to him, desire he is the one who is meant to receive the service of whatever service, whatever love, whatever affection this insignificant, tiny soul can give. It is Krishna is the one that I've been looking for forever. So we're hearing to hear what Krishna is like and how his devotees think. So Sudama, so what is Krishna thinking? He's thinking that Sudama and my position are very different. Sudama is so poor. And I am, after all, the Supreme Lord, controller, owner of everything. And Sudama, when he looked around what he owned, he couldn't find anything to give me, so he gave me something more than he owned. But my position is, I own everything. I can't give him more than I own. And gifts should be an equal reciprocation. If someone gives you $1 million and you want to give him a gift, you don't give him a fly. The reciprocation of a gift within one's capacity should be equal to the mood and of the gift. Bhava Grahi Janardana, Krishna accepts the essence of the mood. So he saw Sudama gave him more than he had, and I'm in a difficult position. I can't give him more than I have because there is nothing external to what I have. And he was so embarrassed that he wouldn't mention anything to Sudama. He thought, I've been again outdone by my devotee. I'm so embarrassed. So Sudama got there and he saw the palaces with servants. And he thought, how can I accept servants? And he thought, the only one way this could have happened. He saw the same trees were there. Everything was there. This is my place. I didn't mention anything to Krishna, but he knows everything. So this is all the desire, merciful desire of my Lord. So he's given it to me. So in his mind, he accepted the servants. And then his wife, who had been transformed into a goddess, beautiful, like a demigoddess, came out. And she saw her husband, skinny, emaciated, and Krishna had kept him like that so she would, this was the old culture, until she was sure he was his wife. I mean, that she was his husband. She wouldn't embrace him or bow down to him, actually. She wouldn't open her heart to him. Very old-fashioned. So then, as soon as she saw him, she went running to him. And then he transformed into having a beautiful demigod-like body. And then they went inside and they looked around. And they saw this is Krishna's gift. Someone may ask, oh, Krishna consciousness is very nice. If they would have told me this in the beginning, I'd chant more sincerely. But Sudama thought, he used everything in Krishna's service. He slept on the ground still. And his mind, not wanting to squeeze pleasure from these material opulences, was just thinking of what friend I have. thinking of his qualities and pastimes and chanting and hearing. This was his mind. He wasn't caught. As soon as I get some opulence, maybe my false ego springs up again. And then I want to enjoy. But Sudama was not like that. Now, I would like to discuss just two verses, and then I will end. Two verses that I saw as if for the first time when I looked at this pastime. We'll see what happens. This should be just an English translation next, on the next verse. This is Sudama's thinking when he saw the opulence. Now, oops. This is what Sudama was thinking. Who can see it and read it out loud? I can't do it so easily. Loud, but yeah, we'll have to be really loudly.
The Lord considers even his greatest benedictions to be insignificant when he occupies even a small service rendered to his well-wishing.
Okay, read it again.
The Lord considers even his greatest benediction to be insignificant when he occupies even a small service rendered to him by his well-wishing.
One more time. Okay, the Lord considers even his greatest benedictions to be insignificant. This is who we're dealing with. He'll give so much, but he considers it insignificant. Next, nothing. This is nothing. Go ahead, continue.
Thus with pleasure the Supreme Soul accepted a single armful of the flat rice I brought him.
Excuse me just for a moment. Think about that. The Lord considers even his greatest benedictions to be insignificant. So he's giving and giving and giving. He's giving the air, the water, the food, the sunlight, the moonlight. And he's not thinking, I'm giving them so much. He's thinking, I'm just giving. And the second part of this, he magnifies even a small service rendered to him by his well-wishing devotee. He thinks the smallest thing you give him to be great. From his viewpoint, he thinks I cannot give anything to the devotees, but what they have given me is so great. So therefore, Sudama said, I gave him one palm of rice, full of rice, and look what he's returned it. And he's embarrassed. He's embarrassed thinking that the weight of the reciprocation is improper. Now, consider who you have tried to serve in this world. If you have a job and you have that horrible four-letter word called a boss, you're in there, and sometimes you may have even tried to sincerely do it. Is your boss ever pleased with you? Is ever enough? Where is that? There. It's never enough. You give something to anyone in this world, you serve a person, and it's never enough. It's insignificant and compared to what they want. Even the devatas, the demigods, you give them a lot and they'll give you a little. But look at Krishna. Look at Krishna's mood. You give him a little bit and don't start thinking like a businessman. that I'll give him a little bit and get a lot. You give a little bit with your heart, which means that, I mean to say, that we are insignificant souls. I mean, really insignificant souls. We can't give him anything significant. And we can't, and I tend to think, I've done so much, why doesn't, I've done so much. Why don't I get what I want? But no matter how much of my little zeros I give, it's all just, there's so much self-motivation in it. There's so much selfishness in it. And it's only a little bit compared to all of existence, but it's contaminated. It's so contaminated by my selfish, false ego. Everything. But yet, I make my little insignificant offering to Krishna, and he sees it as something significant. And then he gives everything, up to the point of even giving himself to his devotees. Atma parjanta vadanyata. But bhakta vatsalya atma parjanta vadanyata. He will even give himself to his devotees. That was the first verse that really struck me that I didn't really see before. And there's 18,000 verses approximately in the Bhagavatam. And here's the second verse. And here's the Sanskrit of the second verse. Wait, yep. Now I'm going to try to find it to make it a little easier for me to read. Just give me a moment. You can... Oh, who is our... Could you read it with a loud voice? Lila Prasottam Prabhu. You do it. Okay. That's right. Too many years on the computer. I know what it's like. Such a sweet verse. This is what Sudama's realization was. I found it here. Please... Tasyaiva me sorida sakya maitri. Tasyaiva me sorida sakya maitri. Tasyaiva, for him. Indeed, this is how Sudama is thinking. This is what is after experiencing Krishna. This is what is coming out of his heart. Tasyaiva me sorida sakya maitri. There is one little missing page, and when I find it, I'll be... There we go. That means, for him, sorida means... For him... Sorida means so close to the heart. Sakya, my friend. Maitri means friend. Another way, there are more little technical explanations that we'll speak about in a second. Dasyam puna janmini janmini syat. Dasyam puna janmini janmini syat. Tasyaiva me saurida sakya maitri. Dasyam puna janmani janmani syat. Mahano bhavena gunalayena. Mahano bhavena gunalayena. Vishajajastad purusha prasanga. Purusha jatastad purusha prasanga. For him, for him, life janmani janmani, life puna janmani janmani. This is what is springing from his heart. Life after life, birth after birth, may I serve him with love, sodida. May he be always near to my heart. Sakyam, friendship. And a very interesting word is used here, sympathy, in the translation. Sympathy. Now we'll talk about this word in a second. And may I cultivate such firm attachment for him. How? By the precious association of his devotees. This is what I want. The Lord, this is his conclusion. The Lord is the supremely compassionate reservoir of transcendental qualities. Guna layena. So we heard about how he deals with those. You're all listening so attentively, considering we've been going on for so long. I really do appreciate it. Thank you. But we're almost finished. Guna nalayat. That we talked about two of his qualities. How when you chant his names, his consciousness focuses on you. And we talked about how you give him a palmful of rice and he'll even give himself to you. These are two of his qualities. We talked a little about his beauty and his lotus eyes. But Krishna has unlimited qualities. He's an ocean of qualities. An unlimited ocean of qualities. Guna layena. He is a alayena means a reservoir, an unlimited reservoir of guna, of qualities. Just consider that. May I, the supremely compassionate reservoir of all transcendental qualities. This is our Lord. This is Krishna. And life after life, may I serve him with love, friendship, and sympathy. Now, sympathy, when we usually think of sympathy, what do we think of? What do you think of? What word comes to your mind? Huh? Mercy, but it's something that. Yes, the superior gives sympathy to the inferior, but that's not the meaning of sympathy here. There is something, if you musicians know this, when you take one string, and if there's another string that's tuned to it, if you vibrate that string, the other string that you're not vibrating will vibrate it along with it. You follow what I mean? You vibrate one string and another string that is sympathetically tuned to it, that string will vibrate it. Yes? Yes. So I want to serve him, he says, with sympathy, that what is vibrating in his heart will vibrate in my heart. Wow. What is vibrating in Krishna's heart will vibrate in my heart. Think of that also in terms of our Srila Prabhupada, to be sympathetically attuned to what is in his heart. May I cultivate such firm attachment for him by the precious association of his devotees. By the association of his devotees. The most difficult thing to do is to associate with devotees in the sense of keeping in mind that it is precious. Because all the non-precious parts tend to come to the foreground of our consciousness. But remember Krishna's mood, and he takes the precious from with Ajamil, he took that which was precious and held on to that. Now, I'll just end by two more points. I'd like to read something Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said about this verse. He defined these things. Krishna thought, this is Sudama thought, Krishna thought what he was giving me, although great, was small. And he thought that what I was giving him, although it was insignificant, he thought it was great. May I have affection. That was the Sauridam towards Krishna, who was so compassionate to his devotees. Sakyam. Let the affinity, the desire manifest in my heart to live in Krishna's association. Think about that when you're in Varsana. Let the desire manifest in my heart to live with Krishna's association, not to be always in the association of my crazy rascal mind, but to live in Krishna's association. And Matri, the attitude of intimate camaraderie, and dasyam, mean very close on the same mission. Take up Krishna's mission, be sympathetic to Krishna's mission, and dasyam, in a mood of service. So this was Sudama's mood. Quite wonderful. And then one last point is that when Krishna's looking at us as we chant, we may tend to think that he's looking at us, oh, you're not listening here, you're not paying attention, you're thinking about this, you're thinking about that, like some weird database program or something that's recording everything. You're going to pay for that, and you're going to pay for that. You're not thinking of me now. You're thinking of something you shouldn't be thinking about. No, no, no. You're sleepy. You're yawning. I saw you. I'm looking at you. Don't forget I'm looking at you. No, 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 no. Remember his compassion. So keep in mind that that's Krishna's compassion. And in every relationship, there are two parts of the relationship. So don't worry about Krishna's part. Trust that he's viewing with compassion. But just keep your mind on your part, on how you would like to reciprocate while you are chanting with his compassion, how you would like to chant in the proper mood. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Hare Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Ajamil ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Govinda ki jai, Sri Sri Gauranathai ki jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Sri Varsana Dham ki jai, Jai Jai Sri Radhe, Jai Jai Sri Radhe, Hare Krishna.